Rolling. What's happening, y'all? Zach and Andy here, broadcasting from Studios 353 in beautiful East Nashville, Tennessee. Andy, how's it going, brother?
Good. It's a Memorial Day, so how have you spent your day?
Lifting.
Okay.
Walking.
Okay.
Enjoying a little bit of downtime.
Okay.
Gonna whip up a little steak for dinner, treat myself to some protein and fat.
Word.
And then probably go to bed early.
I love it. That's my favorite day.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously didn't have any sessions today. Did a little bit of work, had some computer stuff, had a couple calls, but yeah, really, really enjoyed a lazy weekend and a nice Memorial Day today. Obviously a lot of our fitness friends got in their Murph workout this morning.
Yes, apparently. I only have one client that tried it, and he did great, actually. Considering he doesn't run anymore, he got it done in, like, I think he said 47 minutes, which is 1 minute slower than his previous time. But he's not been running, so, like, we both, like, talked about it, and he was like, I don't know if I'll do that well because I haven't been running. And I was like, I don't know. We'll see what happens. And
yeah,
1 minute shy of his previous record.
Wow.
Not bad, considering he hasn't been training for it.
Yeah. So, for those not in the know, Murph... So, CrossFit has a handful of... What would you call them? Challenge workouts, so to speak. Kind of these workouts that everybody knows, everybody does at least once or twice a year. Mm-hmm. And they're oftentimes named after a traditional... lady's name. You have Fran, you have Cindy, you have... Those are the only two that I remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know, but...
And then there are also challenge workouts named after fallen first responders and military personnel. And so Murph being being probably the most well-known.
Hmm. And it's a, what is it, a mile run, 300 air squats, 200 push-ups, and 100 pull-ups? Is that correct?
And another mile run.
And then another mile run. I can't remember the order of operations there, but yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
Yeah, it's a wild workout.
Yeah. Oh, and the original Murph was done with a 20-pound weight vest. All
right.
Of those events.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is quite a bit, actually.
Yep.
Well, it would be quite a bit for any average lifter, but with a 20-pound weight vest would be kind of insane.
Yeah, it's gnarly.
Yeah, I've never done it. Have you done it?
I did it 1 year back in Charlotte, I think.
With or without the weighted vest?
I'm pretty sure I used a weighted vest for part of it. I don't think I did the whole thing.
Mm.
And I can't quite remember if I did it. I'm pretty sure I did it by myself, because I don't think I can't imagine I had any of my other clients do it. But yeah, you know, just did like a mile on the treadmill, and yeah, 300 air squat, 200 push up, 100 pull up, another mile. Yeah, yeah. If you can get that done in under an hour, that's pretty good.
You're cooking, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the 100 pull up part.
That's gnarly.
Right, with, especially with a 20-pound pack. That's gnarly. That's a lot.
Specifically, I remember mixing the reps up or mixing the exercises up. I don't know if that's allowed.
Technically, I don't think you're supposed to.
Okay.
But...
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure I did like 20 air squats, 10 push-ups, and like 5 pull-ups. And I just did that as a sequence.
Right. Well, and you know, this is... Not to knock the Murph or whatever, but at the end of the day, like, if all the reps get done, it's all working, it's all good.
Right.
I would have a hard time if someone was like, oh, well, I did the Murph, but I split it up this way. I would have a hard time being like, oh, well, that's cheating.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you didn't do the real Murph. I'd be like, you still did your 300, your 200, and your 100. Like, that's impressive. And you didn't have to. Nobody's like contractually obligated to do the Murph. So if you want to split it up it's one of those weird things in fitness, and this happens occasionally in fitness, where there are rules, and I'm using air quotes, there are rules to follow.
Yeah.
And I'm over here like, if the work gets done, like, who gives a shit how it got done?
Well, you know, that's also an interesting point, because I think that is probably also how people get rhabdo, is having like these high repetition compound exercises that are done, you know, again, four insanely high reps with like nothing in between.
Right.
So like, maybe not the, you know, maybe not the squats or the push-ups. I don't know, maybe the push-ups. But I could see, like, if I tried to do 100 pull-ups, you know, obviously not in a row, but, like, as quickly as I could, that builds up such a, that builds up so much fatigue, builds up so much of the waste product in the muscle. And, yeah, if you don't have anything else to do in between, or you're not taking, like, adequate rest, that's how rhabdo comes in, which is basically when your system can't flush the toxin, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
that's a byproduct of your muscles working fast enough, and then you become toxic.
Well, not just that, your muscle cells burst.
Burst, mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah.
That's no good.
Actually, the way the way they figure out like rhabdomyolysis is like when they do like blood testing, you have like an excess amount of creatine in your blood.
From all those burst muscle cells.
From all those muscle cells bursting.
Dude.
Which is also called apoptosis.
Mm, right. Mm. Apop.
Apoptosis.
You don't want that.
When your muscle cells are literally like, and then just die. So if you want to kill your muscle cells, then yeah, push your limits like that.
Yeah. We want the creatine to stay in the muscle.
Right.
We
not come out in bloody urine.
Yep, definitely not.
Hmm.
All that to say, I knew eventually we would be talking about bloody urine when we brought up...
It only took, 72 episodes?
As soon as we brought up CrossFit. But yeah, but all that to say, obviously our jabs and our criticisms at CrossFit can, you know, produce quite a long laundry list, so to speak. But always like to give kind of credit where credit is due. You know, somebody asked me recently, like, what were my motivations for continuing to train?
Because,
you know, I'm at the point now where it's like, you know, I'm as driven and as motivated to train, I think, as I've ever been. But, you know, I've gone through peaks and valleys, and it's, you know, morphed over the course of time. But, yeah, I always try to respect the fact that there are multiple levels to motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing that can be kind of a weird conversation, but I also think can be valuable in certain circumstances, this whole idea that CrossFit is tapping into, where it's like, you're doing this workout in the name of
so-and-so.
Someone who sacrificed themselves, like quite literally, you know? I mean, religions are oftentimes founded on the sacrifice of the prophet.
Hmm.
Right? So it's really not it's not a long stone to throw when we're talking about, well, what's your motivation for doing Murph? It's like we're thinking of a true, real American hero who sacrificed his life and went above and beyond for his country. Obviously, regardless of your politics or what you think of the conflicts themselves, it's powerful imagery,
mm-hmm.
and it taps into a certain type of motivation, I think, for a lot of people. When you start to think, like, this is what the human mind and body is capable of, and if I can get a sliver of that to help motivate me to do this wacky workout, well, that's what I'm going to do. Would the Murph workout be as popular? Would people even do it if it was just called the, you know, the 500 rep challenge or whatever? But you attach a name to it, and you attach a meaning to it, and it's one of the biggest events in fitness, in the fitness culture. And I think there's something beautiful to that. There's something valuable to that. There's something very cool and interesting about kind of using this idea of like the spirits of your ancestors, or just pontificating on what people before you have done that helps you kind of tap into extra reserves in your own mind and your own body. And I think that's very special. Obviously, we have to temper that with, you know, the reality of someone's work capacity and physical limitations and that whole thing. But yeah, look no further than a CrossFit gym on Memorial Day morning to see the power of that ideal.
I agree. There is a cynic side of me that would disagree, but I don't know if we should go there. We don't have to go there.
Yeah,
it's Memorial Day. Let people enjoy their fitness.
Yeah, no, totally.
However they want to express it.
Totally.
But I have a cynical side of that, but...
Yeah, of course you do.
I always do.
Of course you do. There is a cynical side. And I mean, honestly, you kind of, with your own catchphrases, with your own, you have your own set of imagery that you use in your gym.
I do. Right. So I'm not trying to like diminish this idea of like something bigger than myself. Because I do think that people often attach themselves to like this belief system or core values or what something that's like bigger than them. I do think that's important. Whether it's religion or workouts or whatever that is, I think the human nature is to try to like feel like they belong. My own criticism of Murph or any workout that's named for somebody is a sort of like self-aggrandizing version of it, where counter to your point, instead of respecting the person who did the workout first and like popularized it, it's almost like this trope of, well, CrossFit does Murph on Memorial Day, so everybody's doing Murph. Everybody like is this thing, and it's sort of like, in a weird way to me, it almost can, not always, but can like diminish the whole point of like what it was originally. It gets sort of lost in the pomp and circumstance of like the event.
Yeah,
of course. And so, I'm not trying to diminish, and I'm not trying to say like don't do it or whatever. But I do feel like with a lot of probably CrossFit workout, because they are named or whatever after a particular person, this sort of self-aggrandizing event, like, oh, I did Murph today.
Right.
What was your Murph time?
Right.
Or whatever. And so it's just a weird, to me, it's a weird thing. And it's a great workout. Don't get me wrong. I say a great workout. It's a fine workout. And honestly, you could probably kill it if you trained exactly for it. Like, truthfully, like, are you going to go do heavy singles to train for Murph? Like, squats? You're going to go do heavy single squats to train for Murph?
No, I'm not doing that.
No, you're going to do high rep squats. You can do a lot of high rep push-ups.
Yeah,
a lot of high rep pull-ups.
Yeah, of course.
So you could game the workout to, like, to do a great time.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I have my own personal issues with it. But I think it's a great workout. And I think it unifies a lot of people, which, in fairness, my flavor of fitness outside of my own gym doesn't do. Like, well, all right, let me walk it back a little bit. Unless you're competing at powerlifting or competing at Olympic weightlifting or competing at Murph, all fitness, tribal or not, doesn't really like coalesce down to this like greater than me position or whatever you want to call it. So like, even though I had my own gym with my own quirky sayings and my own t-shirts or whatever, we're just doing the same shit everybody else does. What makes MySpace special is that camaraderie and that community or whatever. So I don't want to diminish and downplay that.
Here's what I'm saying, Andy.
Okay.
I need you to write a workout and call it the Zach Henderson Challenge. You do it every year on 7-Eleven, and you hold a big donation drive.
I'm just going to have you do 7 snatches and 11 front squats.
Perfect. I love that.
AMRAP for 11 minutes.
See? You're a genius. Gather donations for the Zach Henderson Fund.
Double kettlebell snatch, 7 rounds. These are double kettlebell snatch for 7, front squat for 11, AMRAP for 11 minutes. That is the easiest workout I've ever come up with.
Until you do it.
Until I do it. It's easy to write on paper. Considering I can't even do a kettlebell snatch, let alone a double kettlebell snatch, it would be really hard for me to finish that workout.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Got it.
Well, hey, taking something beautiful and packaging it and commercializing it for your own gain, that's the American way. So thank you for participating, Andy. I'm looking forward to seeing how much money you can raise for the Zach Henderson Fund this year. I'm really looking forward to it. I think you can really make some waves here.
I mean, we were talking about your guitar off air a minute ago. Maybe another Gibson guitar.
Oh, at least.
at least.
I think you can rake in plenty of support for the Zach Henderson Fund.
Okay. Maybe you can get a Gibson guitar and I'll get one. 2 Gibson guitars.
We'll talk about the Andy Van Drive at another time. This is about me.
I'm going to say, all right, so my birthday is 313.
Yeah, you have a whole
other
year.
Yours is coming up. We have a whole other year. Yours first. All right. Got you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So obviously I'm poking a little bit of fun. But obviously there's 2 sides to that whole story, which is we can kind of tap in to some very powerful emotion to find new levels of performance. But we can also, in our Instagram, TikTok society, culture of you, so to speak. Those sentiments can be lost amongst the videos and the pictures and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, I'm sure we had a similar conversation a year ago. I'd be curious to look that up.
Probably.
Yeah. But that's enough. That's enough.
CrossFit talk.
CrossFit talk. Yeah.
Oh, shit, we're 20 minutes in already.
Can you believe it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so skinny fat?
Skinny fat. Let's talk about the skinny fat solution. So what is skinny fat?
I'm genuinely curious how you define this, because someone asked me earlier, because I mentioned it when I went to lunch earlier. I was like, I think we're going to talk about skinny fat. And someone was like, what does that mean? And so I had a kind of image in my head of what skinny fat was. And how I would coach it, but I'm curious your image and how you would coach it.
Great question. Skinny fat. I think the easiest example would be like someone who has not really trained.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone who hasn't strength trained, who hasn't put on muscle in any notable capacity. So you're essentially talking about the skinny part. Skinny part is we're talking about, you know, a frame, again, that isn't, I don't want to say isn't strong. Let's say has vast untapped potential. Let's just say a body that has vast untapped potential, if I want to be somewhat politically correct.
Okay.
You know? That's the skinny part. The fat part is, I don't know, let's say for guys, I don't know, body fat percentage wise, would you call that anything over like 20-ish percent body fat?
Probably, but I would also consider it like in the nomenclature of our day, the dad bod.
The dad bod.
The dad bod. Mm. Somebody who's not like overweight, not like fat, but also like is not fit. So they're not like overweight. They're not like, you know, you wouldn't go into your doctor's office and they'd be like, oh, you need to drop 30 pounds or whatever. But like someone who probably could be physically active very easily and they just aren't.
Yeah.
So I think the dad bod.
Yeah, the dad bod.
When I think of skinny fat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably yeah. Someone who's like genetically gifted to not be like overweight, overweight.
Right.
And I use that term realistically, genetically gifted, because if you can be inactive and not overweight, that's probably genetically gifted.
Right. Yeah.
So to be yeah. like just, you know, out of shape, but on the scale of like American, you know, weight and body type, I wouldn't call them fat, probably like normal weight or like just overweight, maybe.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, it's, I don't know, it's kind of weird splitting hairs over particular physique types.
Can I ask you, how do we come up with this subject matter again?
I brought it up.
Yeah, you did, but like what was inspired by that?
Oh, because I've like YouTube comments. Social media comments. Oh. What do you do for skinny fat?
Oh, I was wondering because I was like, I don't know. I like the subject matter, but I was like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That
especially
makes sense.
You know, if I'm just drawing from my own experience, my own bubble, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
This seems to be a question that comes up a lot with men.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say like younger men, let's say like 20s and 30s.
Yeah. I would say between 20 and 30 years old.
Yeah.
Single or maybe like, you know, coupled, but not like no kids yet. Even though yeah. I said dead bod.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, so to me, I think like the stereotypical like skinny fat physique is kind of a manifest of like your standard American diet and lots of standard American entertainment, which and, is sitting
right football
for long periods of time, sports watching ball.
Sports ball,
watching movies, watching television shows, and sure. playing video games.
Sure. Maybe going for a walk occasionally, but not really engaging in any other physical activity.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. So, when I think of this, when I think of like the person who, again, if I'm kind of drawing on my own experience, especially working back in Charlotte, which, where my gym was had a lot of college kids. Hmm. It was right near the college campus. Hmm. So we had a lot of like recent college grads or, you know, 19 to 21 year olds who like suddenly life and cheap beer and mm-hmm. cheap food was like catching up with them. And obviously would come to the gym looking for the skinny fat solution. So when I think of like skinny fat, I like to think of it as just, again, I'm being a little bit politically correct, but like someone who has lots of untapped potential. So it's like we almost could start anywhere and start getting some good results.
Hmm.
So the big question is usually, do I lean out first,
hmm.
or do I bulk up and then lean out, or what are the first and most important steps, so to speak? And of course, I always say the most important thing is just developing the habit of training in the first place.
I would agree.
You know, just getting into the gym, so to speak.
Okay.
But I'm curious. I'm curious what your advice might entail.
You want me to go first?
Sure.
Here's what I think based on my experience. Now, this is anecdotal. I don't want to pretend like what I'm about to say is universal for all people all the time. But here's where I would be cautious. Especially in this demographic, because I think we're talking about probably like early 20s to late 30s, right? Late 20s, mm-hmm. early 30s. Early 20s to early 30s. As soon as one has visible abs, it is really hard to let go of the idea that you might not have visible abs if you decide to go into a bulking phase.
Mm.
It's been my experience that everybody wants abs, and if they ever get there, they are very reluctant to let go of it. Like any shred of body fat where their abs might become less visible, they fight me on it. They're like, well, but what if I lose my abs? And I'm like, that's the point. You're going to. So in this particular scenario, I think that I would approach this. If someone was like, I just want to get jacked and tan and fit and whatever, and you come in kind of skinny fat, I would honestly push people as hard as possible into gaining as much mass as possible as quickly as, like, you know, makes sense for their, you know, schedule and body type and what they're eating and whatever. In other words, I would not go lean first and then add mass, because I think that they would fight me on it. They'd be like, oh, well, I have abs now. Like, what? Why would I ever want to put on muscle? So I would gain this situation and be like, all right, let's just get jacked, like just fucking big as possible. Give me a year. And even that, and you and I both know this, even a year is not that much time. In the grand scheme of things, it'll be as big as possible. A year is not long. It sounds like forever. I'm sure people are going to be listening to this and be like, a year? A whole year. 365 days. And I'll be like, yes. And that's honestly a short timeline. But I would honestly be like, let's just get as big and as jacked as possible in 1 year. And then at the end of that year, let's talk about maybe leaning out or whatever. But I would not at all take a skinny fat person and be like, let's just get skinny first. Mm. And there's another part to this too. And this is more pragmatic and more physiological. When you have a lot more muscle mass, you get away with a little bit of dietary leeway, if you will.
Yeah.
If you're pretty skinny, we'll say skinny fat, and pretty undertrained, for you to be like lean, like shredded lean, is pretty low calorie, pretty low intake. And so like we're already starting you out as low as possible to get you there, because you just don't have any mass to like burn it away.
Mm-hmm.
And you have no experience. Like you can't go in the gym and just like lift like a maniac and help burn it away. So you and I would both agree, we wouldn't use exercise to like burn calories to get to a leanness level. We would use a dietary intervention. But at that skinny fat level, you kind of have to attack it both in terms of low calorie intake and high intensity performance in the gym. That's a lot, like a lot. Forget all that, is the point I'm trying to make. Forget the dietary part. Since you're already eating in a caloric surplus, two things are going to happen. The first is you're probably going to recomp anyway because you're undertrained and overfed. So you're going to build muscle and burn fat probably simultaneously. And before we ever get to a point where you have visible abs and then you don't want to let them go, let's just get as big as possible first. And then we'll talk about dieting down to show it off. But I don't think I could go the other way around.
Mm. Yeah. That all sounds great. And I don't have any... I don't necessarily have any criticisms in your reasoning and your approach, but mine is a little bit different.
Okay.
Now, granted, a lot of this obviously depends on the person.
Sure.
Depends on the personality. I would kind of take the approach of going I'm almost kind of splitting the difference. I would err towards getting like attacking the body fat percentage and like strength numbers in the gym simultaneously, and like addressing like whatever like obvious nutritional like issues there might be. So like cleaning up the diet, making sure we're getting in whole foods, making sure we're getting in vegetables, that whole thing. So I kind of split the difference in the sense that like I kind of think that getting abs in the first place is very, it can be very, very hard. And I think like that's why that's like the elephant that we need to start eating first. Because when you do get those abs, speaking to your point, and then they're like, well, I don't want to lose them. Well, maybe my work is done. Like if I can get you abs in 6 months and then you're like, I'm totally happy with like my physique and everything. Well, maybe that's like the best thing that I could do for you. And then I could just like bow out. And then on, if we're also stacking on top of that, being very strength and technique oriented in the gym, you know? So again, like that's already like my MO is just obviously going, you know, going in like tight and nuanced with like lifting techniques. But yeah, if we can get like the stereotypical skinny fat, individual to get really confident and competent on like the major power lifts, maybe kettlebell swings, maybe overhead press, and then like all like your bodybuilding stuff, like some of your cables, your dumbbell work, all that jazz. I think that's like a huge, those are a huge first few steps. Cleaning up the diet, understanding what a calorie deficit is, and then getting someone having fun in the gym. Mm. To me, those are kind of like a few of like the soft skills that are probably most important for this individual. Knowing what is optimal or suboptimal in terms of like dietary habits, maybe breaking some habits around, you know, like eating a lot of dessert or drinking a lot of beer or maybe just generally being inactive or like not having like a consistent gym or training habit, all of these things. I kind of consider those the most important points. And so that when, you know, when we can get this person down to like having a body fat percentage where they do have visible abs, ideally, maybe when they get to that point and they also have a robust base of just like this training habit and being confident and competent in the gym, again, maybe that's as far as they need to go. And maybe they can just maintain a low body fat percentage and slowly get stronger over the course of time while maintaining that.
Hmm.
Is that going to maximize their physique? Probably not. But that's kind of where oftentimes I think sometimes like with the skinny fat personality, so to speak, if I can go that far, a lot of times these people yo-yo so much and they don't ever get any one thing done.
Right.
Which is sometimes how they just end up skinny fat in the first place. Like they jump ship on programs, they jump ship on diets, and there's maybe like this whole yo-yoing idea of bulking and cutting and bulking and cutting, and then you don't ever spend enough time in any one direction to get anything done. So that's kind of my approach, is obviously habit-based, but probably habit-based towards reducing body fat to either a healthy or maybe even a shredded like level. Because I mean, that's oftentimes like the hardest part is understanding a calorie deficit, committing to a calorie deficit, and sticking to it. Then if they don't want to lose their abs, it's like, well, that's maybe okay. So that's my general approach and answer.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then hopefully there are like mental and emotional gains along the way to where you can have that conversation where it's like, well, if you do want to get way stronger or you do want to get way bigger, then we might have to lose the abs for a season or two. And hopefully they're in a better position, a better place to hear that conversation and to understand it.
To your point, I do think there's probably like an immense amount of buy-in because I think the layperson associates fitness with like visible abs. And so if you can take them from where they're at to visible abs, then there's a ton of buy-in. They're like, oh, well, now I know what it takes to have that physique that I see on the magazines or in the movies or whatever. And so I think there's a ton of buy-in and there's probably a lot of value in that. So I won't discount that. I won't discredit that because I think that's actually a decent approach. I think my only fear would be, again, like once you're there, like once you're at that leanness level, and I had this conversation today with a client, the amount of effort, let's assume that effort is equated for two different scenarios I'm about to talk about. So the amount of effort is high. The effort to have visible abs is high. It's hard to have visible abs. But the timeline is relatively short depending on where you're starting from. In the case of skinny fat, probably in the order of weeks to months. In the case of skinny fat, to get from, let's say, 165 pounds soaking wet to like 175 pounds soaking wet is twice the amount of time for a similar amount of effort.
Mm.
That would be my only like counter argument is like to get someone who's relatively lean already down to visible abs, assuming that their effort's there and their nutrition's there, there's a lot of assumptions, but assuming that all those things are in check, to get from, 165 pounds to 155 pounds is a matter of a couple months if you do it right and do it well.
Mm-hmm.
To get from 165 pounds soaking wet to 175 pounds of pure muscle is 10 months minimum effort. So to lose 10 pounds of fat from 165 to 155 a couple months of effort. To gain 10 pounds of pure unadulterated muscle is 10 months minimum based on the most recent literature that we've seen. Unassisted, like drug unassisted or whatever. So you're eating all the right things, you're training. To gain 10 pounds of pure muscle, minimum 10 months. So I'm not saying one or the other is better or worse. It depends on your goals and who you are and what you want in your life or whatever, but I think, again, once you get like to that skinny, like visible abs thing, it's really hard to then like try to scale that amount of distance to go from 155 pounds lean to 175 pounds lean. It's an immense, it's Mount Everest in terms of like overall like work and effort to gain 20 pounds of pure unadulterated muscle, assuming that's what you want to do. So it's a weird balance that we're talking about because on the one hand, to get relatively lean, I'm not saying it's easy. It's simple. It's not easy. To get 10 pounds of muscle is not easy. It's still simple. Not easy. And the timeline is probably at least two times, if not three or four or five times as long. And I think most people don't have that kind of patience. That's kind of where we're like, when you're talking to somebody, especially a new client, like, look, I can take you to skinny, shredded in 2 months, or I can try to, truthfully, I can try to get you looking marginally more jacked in 10 months. Where are you going to go? Like, what do you want to choose? Look like you fit the part in 2 months, or try to almost kind of fit the part in 10 months. That's a hard balance. I'm the same way as a trainee. I have a difficulty with that because on the one hand, I'm like, I want to be as big as physically possible. But the eating and the training and my genetic predisposition, neither of my parents are big. So like I'm working uphill both ways to try to get big. But if I really wanted to get lean and lose the last 12 pounds I want to lose, assuming that I did all the things right, it would probably be pretty downhill.
Mm-hmm.
So you're picking two different monsters here.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say that one's better, like a better decision than the other. It depends on who you are and what you want to do. But like they're not easy either way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pick your poison.
Pick your poison. And yeah.
Yeah.
Building muscle, I think people have a vast disconnect on what it takes to build an appreciable amount of muscle mass.
Yeah.
There's an immense, because everyone, and you know this, everyone who starts weight training thinks they're going to look like The Rock tomorrow. They're not. They're never, ever going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, The Rock today doesn't even look like The Rock 20 years ago. And The Rock 20 years ago had been putting in the work for 20 years.
Right.
You know? So it's like...
Yeah.
It's maybe a whole conversation around other
bands,
supplements.
Yeah, but even still, that all that said, everyone has that image, though. Everyone thinks that they're going to get to be The Rock. And I would love to be as big as The Rock. Now, my wife, Megan, she'd be like, no, that's too much. Too much muscle. But as a trainee, as someone who lifts weights every day, I'd be like, fuck yeah, to be as big as that fucking guy, that's great. That would be amazing. I'm never, ever in my lifetime, even with drug assistance, ever going to be The Rock. It's just never going to happen for me. It's just not. You and I both know that.
I believe in you. I feel like with enough drugs, you can be as big as The Rock. And those Rock cheat days? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That, well, to go back to the skinny fat thing, The Rock gets to eat ridiculous food because he's so big. That's the best part about it, is like he can eat kind of ridiculous amounts of food, especially ridiculous, I'm going to put air quotes, of less than stellar bad food because he's so jacked. He's so big. He's going to burn through that really quickly. The average skinny fat person can't eat a stack of pancakes that's a foot high because they're not The Rock. They're just not, and they're never going to be.
Yeah. Well, yeah, again, coming back to an example we use a lot of times, knowing your point A, knowing where you're actually starting off,
right,
is a very hard pill to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
For practically all of us, practically all the time. I mean, if I'm being honest, you know. And then understanding where your point Z is, being realistic with all the steps that is going to entail. And then just understanding what next steps B, C, and D entail. And that's why the skinny fat conversation has been such a prevalent kind of recurring theme, especially amongst internet forums and articles and, you know, just questions that the people have, because you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be confused with The Rock and a hard place. But yeah,
stuck between The Rock.
Yeah, you're stuck between The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. What are you gonna do? What do you do? Yeah, but I think we kind of both have. I think we've laid out differing but effective plans of attack. And the story, the myth, the allegory of the donkey that had a trough of water on one side, let's say 20 feet away, and had a bucket of feed 20 yards away, and he was directly in the middle of both of them, and he was dying of hunger and thirst, and he could not decide where to go, and he laid right down in the middle of the desert, and he died.
Mm.
Because he could not make one decision to go one way for long enough to actually get the goods.
Mm.
And so at the end of the day, what's the moral of that story? It doesn't matter which way you go. Just as long as you go far enough to get the food or get the water, and then you can go the other way.
Oh, I really like that.
But most of us are the, why do I say the donkey? Because we're a bunch of dumb asses is what we are.
Oh, that's good.
We lean one way, we lean the other way. We go one, I'm thirsty, so I'm going to go towards the, oh, but I'm more hungry, so I'm going to go that way. Mm-hmm. And you go back and forth, and then you just end up passing out right there in the middle.
Yeah.
So just dig far enough, go far enough in one, in any one given direction. It almost doesn't matter. But you get the goods, you cross the finish line, you regroup, you get the benefits from whatever path you chose, then you go and you take the next step.
Mm. No, you're right. I think most people, most of the time, will do that. They waffle between the two. And then that's why they end up like mediocre. I'm one of those people. I can't sit here and be like, oh, I'm hella strong, or I'm hella fit, or I'm hella lean. Like, I wander towards the water, and I just take my time getting there.
Here's one thing that I appreciate that you've really committed to.
Mm.
Your beautiful hair.
Oh, that's easy. That's a really easy one.
See, that takes commitment.
I mean,
you got to let that hair grow. And grow and grow. You can't like cut it and then think, I wish it was long again. It takes long-term commitment.
This is really good.
And it's really paying off.
Yeah. This actually works well because here's what happens when you grow your hair long is you get to a certain length and you fucking hate all of it. All the time. For months on end. You're like, you know what? It's annoying and it's kind of long but not really long enough and it's ugly and it looks like ass. And I feel like I have a mullet, and like you just checked all the, you're just like, this is why this is terrible. And then, eventually, after a long time, your hair touches your shoulders, and you're like, oh, this is great.
And it's glorious.
And it's glorious, and it's gorgeous. That's kind of like trying to put on an immense amount of size, or like fat loss phases. Where you're like, this sucks, and I hate it, and this is hard, and it's forever, and I've been doing it for months on end, and I feel like I'm getting nowhere, and then you cross that finish line, and you're like, oh, shit, oh, wow, shit, it looks great. It's awesome. I love it. I'm glad I did all that work, even though I went kicking and screaming the entire time through it. But yeah, it's the exact same. Fat loss or trying to build muscle, it's all the same. It's an arduous, annoying-ass process. And then you cross that finish line eventually, and you're like, oh, well, shit, I guess I did the thing. It's not like some grandiose, there's no like ticker tape parade or whatever. It's just, oh, my goal was whatever on the scale, and I just crossed that. Okay, cool. Now what? Like, what do I do now?
Yep.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible. I do think, going back to what we were talking about, I do think it's important to try both. I do think everybody who's really in this for the long haul should know what it feels like to diet down to like visible abs, to know what it takes, because it's not easy. I wish that it were. It isn't. And it's not even just that it's not easy. It's exponential in terms of effort. Everyone... It's been my experience as a coach and a trainee that I feel like the effort is fairly linear in terms of like how to get lean, visible six-pack abs. I don't think that's true. I think it starts off linear, but what we don't see on the horizon is that the amount of effort to get lean, like porn star lean, that horizon looks flat, looks maybe a slight slope, and then it takes up like off the mountain. It is an exponential curve. in terms of the amount of effort that it is required to lose. For me, the first 10 pounds was not all that bad. The next 10 pounds was twice the effort. The last 10 pounds is four times the effort. It literally is. If I really want to lose those last 10 pounds, I don't think I can do it realistically without quitting alcohol altogether, without sleeping or going to bed at a reasonable hour, without my weekend dietary strategies looking exactly like my weekly dietary strategies, with no deviation whatsoever. I don't think it's possible. I think that anybody that is able to do it, to get porn star lean and have a semblance of a normal American lifestyle, either they're lying or they don't have it. It's not, I don't think that's real. People who have six-pack abs don't drink beer like I drink beer. And they don't eat barbecue like I eat barbecue. It doesn't happen.
Also depends on the porn you're watching, Andy. I mean,
oh yeah, it depends.
Maybe there's some dad bod.
Maybe some B-level content. Pornography where they're not all that lean. But yeah, but you get the point I'm trying to make.
It's you know, it's funny because the body adapts.
Yeah.
Because the body does not naturally, oftentimes, unfortunately for most of us, want to be super lean and super hypertrophied all over.
No.
So yeah, speaking to your point, there's an exponential amount of effort or time or consistency that's necessary for each next step. That goes for fat loss. That also goes for muscle building and strength building.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of thing. It's like the first, let's say, 5 pounds of muscle you put on, boom, you just show up and do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Second 5 pounds requires maybe some tighter consistency, some periodization, some linear progression. Next 5 pounds, where you're talking about a longer timeline, lifting harder, heavier weights, more volume, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, again, same thing with strength numbers. By the time, you know, by the time you've been lifting, you know, consistently, like let's say for as long as we have, 10 years or so, if you want to set a PR, you're talking about a long road.
Months.
And we're talking about
minimum.
Yeah, we're talking about fighting hard for 2 to 5 pounds. If you can get a 2, 2.5 pound, 5 pound PR on any given lift for as long as we've been training, like that's amazing.
Yeah.
It
doesn't feel amazing, but yeah.
Yeah, it's no small hill of beans. But again, that again just speaks to the rule of the universe or our biology or adaptation, whatever you want to call it, that the newbie gains are real, and each next step you go to, whether that's reducing body fat, whether that's increasing muscle mass or increasing strength numbers, or even, you know, maybe even you know, VO2 max or other, you know, endurance type markers. The better you get, the farther along you go, the harder each next step is to take.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worth it because, I mean, again, going back to the theme of like the skinny fat, it's, I think one of the most important things is the mindset shift, which mm-hmm. is why I kind of grounded the conversation in like habits. Like what are the habits that are going to carry you so far? Because otherwise you can lose a little bit of weight easy. You can gain a little bit of strength and muscle easy. A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't lose a lot easy.
Nope.
You can't gain a lot easy.
Nope.
So if we want to take that second step, again, going back to the ass in the desert analogy, if you want to actually go that third, fourth, fifth step closer to the water trough, it's going to require more time, more effort, more mm-hmm. energy. But you got to get there to make real change,
mm-hmm.
to keep the real change. So yeah, one way or the other, you just got to keep going.
One of the things that's what's fun about the coaching process is anytime someone comes to me and they're like, you know, I really want to have visible abs, I do think that's a noble goal. I also think that everyone should try it at least once to know what it takes. Not just in terms of like the physical effort required to get lean or the physical effort required to get bulky, but like the social, mental, emotional like sacrifice to get there. Now, I'm assuming that most of us don't have genetically gifted parents who are just lean, in which case I could get lean probably pretty easily. But for most of us, most of the time, to get lean, visible abs lean, is going to require some effort. And by some effort, I mean an immense amount of effort in terms of the gym, in terms of what your nutrition looks like, in terms of the sacrifices that you make, like whether you're going to, you know, go out with friends and have a cocktail or whatever, whatever. It does, like the screws get tight towards the end. And I don't think everybody understands what that looks like and feels like. And until they've ever been down that road, they're never going to know. So it's really easy to be like, oh, I want visible abs. And I'm over here like, yeah, me too. But do I really want to give up hanging out with my friends and having a couple drinks or, you know, making pizzas with my wife on Friday night? Maybe, maybe not. But I think that everyone ought to go down that road. And it honestly, probably for most of us, most of the time, it's a very lonesome road because nobody's doing it with you. Unless you have a partner who really wants to have visible abs too, it's a lonesome road. You're doing it for yourself and for yourself only. And at the end of it, if you do it, if you get those like visible abs, nobody cares. They don't. At the end of that, when you cross that finish line, nobody cares. You could have visible abs. Unless you're sponsored, unless Chubbies comes at me and they're like, hey, you have visible abs, we'd love to hire you. It doesn't mean anything other than the fact that I achieved that goal. And maybe going back to what we started with like Murph, maybe the point is just to cross that finish line, to know that we did something together, that it was an impossible amount of physical effort and I did it. Maybe that's the point we're trying to get at with this whole entire podcast. But I do think it requires an immense amount of effort to get visibly abs lean. And I do think everyone ought to know how to go down that road by themselves so they can decide if they ever want to do it again.
I'm glad you finally came around to my line of reasoning, which is get the abs first. You heard it here. Andy talked himself into it. I'm just kidding. But not, but maybe.
But maybe.
Yeah, man. Love it. I think that's a great place to wrap up on.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, this does it from us here on the last Monday of May 2022.
I was like, what year is it?
Wow. Yeah, right. What year is it? So, lots of fun stuff coming up. I will be in Vegas with Tracy Cook.
This coming weekend?
Next. The following, that's going to be Powerlifting Nationals.
She's listening to this podcast, so I need to give you a shirt and stickers to take with you.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. She and I talked about it. I just need to figure out which shirt she wants. If she wants bird or truck. She hasn't responded. I asked. I was like, do you want bird or truck? Here's a picture. And she hasn't responded.
What is taking you so long?
Yeah, come on, Tracy.
The choice is yours.
Yeah.
Make it. That's the whole point of this whole episode.
Yeah.
The choice is yours.
The choice is yours.
You must make it.
All right. So, Tracy, when you hear this episode, make sure you reach out because I need to send Zach out to Vegas with a shirt and stickers. So I need to know if you want bird or truck.
I got the bird. I really like it.
I mean, the baby blue bird is great.
Yeah.
And the mauve truck is great.
Yeah. All right. It's all great.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next week, you and I are off to Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited about that trip. That's going to be fun.
We might have a special infield podcast recording on a boat.
I kind of want to do that.
I kind of feel like we should.
On the one hand, I feel like it's going to be a complete shit show. But I kind of want to try anyway. Because, yeah, that's going to be fun. We're going to be fielding questions from a ton of people.
We'll give it our best shot. And we'll write off the whole trip.
Right. I think there's like 14 of us. So yeah. I think that would be a fun like audience. It'd be like our first audience. Buddy, all right.
First live audience show.
Okay, I think we should try
now
that.
Now we're talking.
All right.
I'm excited. All right. Andy Van asks, have you tried being strong? Only you can answer that for yourself. A to Z, no BS. We will see you next time.
Bye.